Sky Podcast. We're your host. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Holocult. You know what that means. We're back to kick it with you and get you through your work week. Get it started off the way it's supposed to be started, with some weird stuff. It's getting into spooky season. It's beginning of October. It's a good time. Coming in with part two of my little Ouija board
extravaganza.
Extravaganza I was on. I got a part two and a part three. If you haven't listened to part one, go back and listen to that, because I kind of go through the history and whatnot. Go check that. We're going to get into some more negative aspects of the Ouija board, you know, some demons, some murder, all that stuff. You know how it is.
All the typical stuff.
Yeah, all the typical Ouija board stuff. Well, if you're
That's
new
probably
here,
why it got banned from the church.
Yeah, probably.
Whenever people started stabbing each other.
Yeah, because the Ouija board told them to do it.
Yeah, it kind of taints the
water. You're right. If you're new here, thanks for hanging out with us. Check us out. Me and Kyle like to talk a little bit before we get into the crux of the show. If you don't want to listen to us talk, fast forward it a little bit, about the 6-minute mark. We should be back into it. If not, you can listen to us, go through our housekeeping. If you're not new here, hey, welcome back. First off, check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Holosky Podcast and we will be there. Come be part of the community. Join the cult. It's a good time. You know how it is. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like for us to feature on a future show of our listener experience Thursday shows, Kyle's got some information for you.
I do. Holosky Podcast@gmail.com. You're going to write your story out in as much detail as you possibly can. That way it can be properly logged and then properly talked about. Then you're going to send it to us when you hit the little send button. Boop, boop. And then we're going to get it and make you famous.
It's as simple as that, yeah. Really.
And we're going to do our part as well as of logging the unexplained.
We're trying our best, which isn't that good.
But it's good enough.
It is good enough.
It's good enough. We're basically rich.
With paranormal entities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely a thing.
I may have an alien implant.
Steve's got an alien implant, and I've got a lurker.
So we might talk about that on a Patreon episode.
Yeah, we probably should.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. That's not this episode. If you'd like to support this journey, this mission that we're on, plenty of ways you can do it. Head on over to Patreon, $7 a month. You get Patreon exclusive episodes. There's over 50 over there. You get all of our regular content, not only early, but ad free. We know how much you all don't like the ads, but they're there. So you're just going to have to deal with it. I don't know what to tell you. You can go to holoskypodcast.com, check it out. Over there, you've got a merch store where you can get some t-shirts, you can get some hats, some beanies, some stickers, all kinds of good stuff. Best thing you can do is share the show word of mouth. Just keep throwing Holosky's name out there anytime people start talking about weird stuff. You know, it's a good time. It's a good time.
We are getting low on merch in the store.
Ooh.
We are selling out of stuff, so if you want some of that stuff, you better run and get it. Also, trying to come up with a cool design, and this is going to be all on you guys. You guys have been begging for years about hoodies. Well, it's time.
Oh.
So we're going to try to put together a design. If anybody has any cool ideas, send them over. We're going to try to put something together, and I think we're going to try to do, I don't really know what it's called. We'll just say crowdfund. Where we create it, you guys go on there, make your purchase, and then it has a hard end date. If you don't purchase it by the end date, I don't know what to tell you.
Crowd surf.
Yeah, crowd surf. That's right. That's a way better analogy.
Yeah.
And we're going to try it that way first and see how it plays out.
We're trying our best.
Yeah. Because you're right. Hoodies hoodies are pretty legit.
And it's hoodie season. It is. It's 85 degrees out. It should be hoodie season, but here in Illinois, that it doesn't know what it's
doing. I think we're getting there, though. I think hoodie season's right around the corner.
I can only hope so.
Same. I'm really looking forward to hoodie season.
Because I feel really...
seizure.
So, well, I don't know if we had hoodies for that, but...
Freaking stroke victims.
I feel really betrayed when it's October and it's almost 90 degrees.
It's been pretty
rough. It's pissing me off. Yeah. Is what it's doing. It's pissing me off. But yeah, there may be some hoodies in the work.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is go to wherever you listen to podcasts, your podcatcher, if you will, or any social media where you have the opportunity to leave us a rating and review. I'll hunt it down. I'll find it. And I'll shout you out. Still going through these Facebooks. Got a few 24 reviews over there. So going through them. This week's five-star rating and review comes to us from our friend Brian. 5 stars. Brian says, yes, as Garquan Gargoyle's master, I declare this show is a good source of strangeness.
That's legit.
That is. Thanks, Brian. As the master of Garquan, we really appreciate it.
What is Garquan again?
A gargoyle.
Oh, well.
Obviously.
That's pretty dope.
Obviously.
I wish I was a gargoyle's master.
Yeah, that is pretty sick.
Do we really have as many ratings on Spotify as we do Apple?
Probably.
I saw it the other day and it said we had like over 1,000 on Spotify. Like, dang, that's crazy.
Yeah, Spotify used to be our like low end of the show.
Yeah.
Like as far as listeners go, people listen on Apple more, but I don't know. I haven't checked for a while. I'll have to get over there and look at that. So don't hold your breath. Anyway, Brian, thanks for the kind words, the review. Hope everything's going good with Garquan. I imagine it can be a little testing being a gargoyle master.
Yeah.
And the last thing you could do is support our wonderful sponsors, which you will hear from now.
Hey, Holocult, fall is here, and with it comes those cooler nights, heartier meals, and the craving for something warm and satisfying. That's where HelloFresh comes in, bringing you comforting chef-designed recipes and fresh seasonal ingredients right to your front door. This season, they've taken things to the next level with their biggest menu refresh yet. Say hello to a whole new way to do dinner. This menu refresh has made things bigger, healthier, and tastier. The menu doubled to over 100 weekly options, with larger portions and global seasonal recipes. More high-protein, veggie-packed meals, with at least 2 veggies per recipe. The weekly steak and seafood menu has been upgraded, with 3 times more seafood than before, plus fresh seasonal produce at no extra cost. This week, we tried the Hey Honey Salmon, and it was wonderful. The spice-rubbed salmon was crispy and flaky, and it paired great with the lemon honey Dijon sauce. The green beans added a nice, fresh veggie element to the meal. And I mean, who doesn't like potato wedges, right? It was easy to prep and delicious to eat. The best way to cook just got better. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hollow1Pod10FM now to get 10 free meals plus a free item for life. 1 per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as a discount on the first box. New subscribers only, varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/HOLO1Pod10FM to get 10 free meals plus a free item for life. Hey, Holocult. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges. From sleepless nights to stress-filled days, Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. They'll deliver them discreetly to your front doorstep. And you can get them 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code HOLO. Having trouble sleeping? They've got a gummy for that. Sleepy Time gummies knock you out in about 15 minutes. They leave you feeling refreshed, and they don't leave you with a feeling of grogginess or hangover. Having just one of those days where just everybody sucks and everything is going wrong, you just need to reset your mood and your day as a whole. They've got gummy for that too. Epic Euphoria gummies. Just reset your mood and turn your frown upside down. What makes these different is how they paired THC with other cannabinoids, with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, HoloCult listeners get 20% off their first order with code HOLO. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code HOLO at checkout to save 20% on your first order.
And just like that, we are back.
We Wick are and easy.
Back with some more Ouija board weirdness. This is a little more on the nefarious side. Just want to warn you all. There's some murders that take place.
I mean, nefarious can be subjective, I feel like.
I feel like murder is pretty nefarious. I don't feel like there's a whole lot of subjectiveness in murder.
I love it.
Can it be justified? Yes.
Okay.
But.
We might have some twists and turns.
But it's pretty nefarious.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to episode one, please go back to last week and listen to that, where we just kind of touch on some of the history of the Ouija board and like kind of where the whole concept came from and how it started and how like grief played into this whole scenario and how it just kind of, I don't know, it almost helped people connect and deal with that grief of losing their loved ones in a time where there wasn't the internet, you know.
That's right. That's right. I'm recalling the episode now.
Yeah. Yeah. So it had some positives to it, you know.
Right.
And that was a time when the Ouija board didn't have the spirit communication as a whole didn't have all of the taboo linked behind it, you know, like I'd stated in the episode that a family and their friends would get together on the weekends and they would hold seances. They would hold like spirit board writing, you know, parties, Ouija board parties. Like it wasn't this whole taboo thing back then.
It's weird too, because I feel like it should be the opposite.
Like you think we'd be more
open now. Yeah. And not as taboo now, where I feel like it's still relatively taboo today.
Yeah, me too.
It's so weird. It's so weird that they came in hot and they're like, yeah, let's talk to shit and do our thing. And then now, even today, people are still like, nope, don't fuck with them. Don't.
Yeah. And
it's interesting.
And I guess for the most part, like the Catholic Church was probably mostly against it, but there was, so I've got this split into two sections here. I've got like the paranormal and the occult side of some Ouija board stuff here. And then I got like the crime and murder side. I'm not really sure which one to do first. I think I need to do the paranormal and occult side first because,
it's appropriate.
In order to get like to that tabooness of the Ouija board, I feel like we have to go this route first. So we're just going to do that.
Well, quick question. And I'm going to go ahead and derail the whole thing.
Perfect. Perfect.
10 minutes in. I was doing some thinking about this.
Which is what we want you all to do.
Catholicism and religion kind of have a hand in making the Ouija board taboo. And I was talking with somebody, I can't remember which one it was, so I apologize for that. But they basically made the point, which we've talked about and many people have pointed out, communication is communication. And I do agree with that, right? Would you agree with that sentiment? Like, despite the form of communication, communication is communication.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that being said, an oddity that I find from the religious aspect is, especially in Catholicism, if I remember correctly, the upper echelons of the church are the other ones, quote unquote, allowed to communicate with God? And in religion itself, you're communicating with a God. Therefore, communication is communication. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't know. I did take catechism classes before I got married, so I was minimally versed in the Catholic Church, and that did stand out, like, strange to me how there is, like, a hierarchy in who is, like,
worthy,
closer to God,
yeah,
you know, so to speak. But yeah, it almost, I don't know, it almost makes it like who, if you have to be so far up these tiers to be in higher communication with God, like who are you praying to? You know, if I'm down here being a peon, does my shit not count as much as, you know, like a bishop or some shit? Anyway, I get it. Communication is communication. But first off, we need to kind of jump back here. And as we were talking about, like, specifically the Catholic Church kind of sees attempts like Ouija boards to converse with the dead or spirits as kind of a almost dangerous practice. Like, they really look down on it. And I found this interview on Fox News Digital where Father Dan Rehill is talking, and he said, quote, "We too often forget that there's much more to this world than meets the eye. Angels, demons, spirits, and souls do exist, and they can and do impact our lives. Attempting occult practices such as purportedly trying to contact the dead via a Ouija board are a way to open oneself up to demonic activity inadvertently," says Rehill. Quote, "Demons lie and impersonate dead people," said Rehill. "When asking a board for information about a deceased person or a life decision, they are all too happy to embed themselves into our lives. Using a Ouija board is inviting a demon into your life, whether the person has that intention or not." How do you feel about that, Kyle?
I mean, I agree and disagree all at once.
Yeah.
Right? Because obviously, it does open the door for manipulation, because from our knowledge, and I would say Jim Pop knowledge, there is no verifiable way to determine whom you're speaking with.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
You know, there isn't. However, it does seem like you could argue with this statement based upon, I know a little bit about your next episode. And so with that being said, what he states here isn't necessarily true, right? Because of what gets contacted outside of this.
Depending on how you look at it. If those are all kind of the same thing.
True.
Which, like, kind of sucks if they are, but it's been kind of spun that way sometimes. It gets a little weird.
It is. It's strange, and I don't know. So I like caution, right? Because it's the same type of situation we would approach with our children. Be like, no, don't talk to that stranger over there because he's probably a crackhead. And he's going to give you crack candy.
I hate when that happens.
But, you know, that's not a verifiable truth. You know what I mean? That might not be a crack candy dealer. It might be a pretty all right guy sitting over there. I don't know.
He may have good candy.
He might have good candy. I mean, it's still not recommended to take candy from strangers. However, it's not a verifiable truth. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I feel like we as humans will do that, though. We'll lean to the side of caution and just be like, you know what, like, because maybe that person making that statement knows that too, knows that as a factual statement, as they're not all inherently bad that we're speaking with. However, there's still at least a 50% chance that it is a demon that can possess you. Therefore, it's better to lean toward caution and not do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they're, but then you have to ask, like, what if it has nothing to do with the caution side of it? What if this tool essentially opens us up to a higher consciousness, opens us up to actually being able to contact these beings? And institutions like the government or like the church don't want Johnny Q public out here being able to have that kind of power, to be able to tap into that kind of knowledge that's been suppressed for eons.
It's a great point. And I do think that is definitely in the realm of what is happening. I think what sucks about that is I also don't feel like you can make a general statement and be like, it's definitely this.
Yeah.
It's definitely that. Yeah. I think all of it is in combination there and it all runs hand in hand.
Another question I was going to ask you last episode, but I forgot to do it. Do you think that the communication, like, how do you feel it connects to the board itself? Do you think the entities are communicating through the board, or do, because like a big debunking of all this is the ideomotor phenomenon, which is a psychological phenomenon wherein a subject makes motions unconsciously. So like in our brains, we're moving the board.
See, and that's another thing. I do think that's possible.
Which brings me to this question. Do you think they're contacting us through the board, or are they using us as a conduit and the board is just like...
I think the board is
like the pencil, right? The board has 100%. Nothing to do
it's
with
the
it.
Rudimentary tool.
Exactly.
I do. Like when you were framing that, that's exactly what I thought. I think you are invited, because it's no, like the way my brain operates here in this scenario is like whenever you watch Ghost Hunters or whatever and batteries get sucked dry for them to manifest themselves, or the energy of yourself gets drained, you start feeling nauseous because they use your energy.
Yeah.
I 100% think that's what's happening, which is another reason why people would wane, away from it.
Yep.
And be like, no, this probably isn't a good idea, because we don't know exactly what we're agreeing to when we allow these things to manipulate us. I 100% think, I don't think that every single board is enchanted with magical abilities.
Yeah, it's just a tool, like a pencil is. Like we, 100%. When we go in, I feel like when we go into using the board, us ourselves are the conduit, and the board is just the tool to record what's going on.
Absolutely.
There are cases that I found in tomorrow or in next week's episode where entities say that they are communicating telepathically with the board. So they're contacting people through the board as opposed to contacting people through their consciousness and passing the message to the board to where they can like write it out and figure it out. We'll get to that later.
And I do think there is the motor phenomenon you're talking about as well. I think that's 100% real.
I'm going to talk about that for a little bit. According to Wikipedia, the scientific community considers the Ouija board phenomena to be a result of ideomotor phenomena. Michael Faraday first described this effect in 1853 while investigating table turning. Various studies have been conducted recreating the effects of a Ouija board in the lab, showing that under laboratory conditions, the subjects were moving the planchette involuntarily. That's not saying that they weren't being contacted through something moving the board, that they were just doing it not at their own will.
But it's like, I feel like that's a rigged test though, because you can definitely load that test.
Yeah.
Like in a way that makes that person, because it sounds hard to do this, but it's not. But you could ask, like, Steve, like say you passed and I know your favorite snack is a microwave burrito. And I know that. right? And I ask, I'm trying to contact Steve. Oh, shit, I got Steve on the board. Watch this. I'm going to ask him what his favorite snack, you know, his favorite snack is.
It could be
swayed. But your brain is already looking for that answer.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think in situations like that, subconsciously, you're going to aid in that manipulation.
And I almost feel like technically all Ouija board contact can be labeled as the ideomotor phenomenon, because if we're being contacted and being used as a conduit, we're not consciously moving the planchette, whether also, we think we're doing it or not. Like, if we're being used as a vessel for something to communicate through us, that technically is an ideomotor phenomenon.
That's a good point. Dude, that's solid. That's solid right there. I like that. That's good.
So,
because you're not wrong.
I feel like it's a cop out, like trying to kind of brush things off.
We do that too in the scientific community, where they'll get that one desired result one fucking time, and they go, "Yep, this is what it is. Told us so."
Got it. A 2012 study found that when answering yes or no questions, Ouija use was significantly more accurate than guesswork, suggesting that it might draw on an unconscious mind. So that's weird. That's weird. If you ask 10 people a question and they use a Ouija board, they're going to get yes or no questions more right than 10 people without a Ouija board.
That's weird.
Fucking weird is that?
That's definitely weird.
Crazy. I went off on a tangent there that had nothing to do with what I was talking about in this episode.
That's okay.
But I feel like you guys are going to like it. You know, we're talking about demons. Demons through the Ouija board, which we got to go into the number one demonic possession case ever, which is the exorcism possession of a boy by the name of Ronald Doe, which is a pseudonym, so it's not his real name, but it's the one that inspired The Exorcist.
Rando.
So one of the most famous cases of Ouija board possession is that of Roland Doe, a young boy from St. Louis, Missouri, which he isn't actually from St. Louis. He was from the East Coast, moved to St. Louis. I don't go into a lot of detail here, because I feel like this is a whole episode in itself. In 1949, he began experiencing unexplained disturbances after using a Ouija board with his aunt, who was a spiritualist. She kind of got him into it. They were doing Ouija stuff, contacting ghosts, having a good time. Well, when she died, everything kind of went south. Soon after, strange noises filled his home. Objects moved on their own. Scratches appeared on his body. His behavior just did a 180. He became violent. He spoke in guttural tones. Just classic what we think is a possession that is said to have all stemmed from the use of this Ouija board and his aunt. Jesuit priests were called to perform a series of exorcisms during which witnesses reported objects levitating, unearthly screams, demonic voices. The case again became the inspiration for William Blatty's The Exorcist, one of the most terrifying horror films of all time. Weeks after the spiritual battles, the boy finally was freed from the possession. The actual exorcism did take place in one of the hospitals here in St. Louis. I can't remember which one it was. But rumor is they have that whole wing like blocked off and all this other shit.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, The Exorcist is kind of the tipping point in where the Ouija board's catching a bad name. This is kind of where it comes down to, they're like, oh shit, this could be something negative using this, because like he thinks he's communicating in the movie, he thinks he's communicating with a happy go lucky entity, but it's really a demon named Pazuzu. That's,
do you think that like when it comes to the negativity of a Ouija board on a person, do you think some of it comes down to the person's mental stability? And what I mean by that is like, and I know there's things like latching and all that bullshit, but for argument's sake, in the way my brain's going right now, is like, say you and me are contacting fucking Pazuzu or whatever his name, Kazoo, whatever his name is.
Kazuzu.
And whether it's telling us lottery numbers or what's for dinner tomorrow, whatever the fuck, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. That it's irrelevant. Do you think it's possible that it weighs more with certain people than others? So in that example, I feel like in most cases, you and me are like, we have that experience and we're like, yeah, that's fucking crazy, but whatever. It doesn't matter to us what Kazoo said. You know what I mean? Where some people take it like almost like gospel was presented to them and they dwell on that situation and it becomes more infectious in their mind.
Oh yeah. I believe that 100%.
You know what I'm saying? Cause yeah. Like, I don't know. I just think about, and once again, I know there's other factors. There's the like where they can latch and you open a door, blah, 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 blah. But what if a lot of it does happen to revolve around your mental frailty in allowing those doors and windows to be open and accessed?
Yeah. I feel like it's 100% has to do with that. Like if you're using some sort of contact method and you are an extremely, like you're deep in your Christian faith and you are getting messages by what you think is Jesus, like you're going to take that as like
truth.
Absolutely.
100%. Like, I've been chosen. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of that kind of go, not necessarily with Christianity contacting Jesus, but
no,
like,
no, it was a good example though. Yeah. Like it's a solid example.
I think that has a lot to do with
it. Yeah. I think I agree. Absolutely. Yeah. Cause there's like, especially if you went in it with the intention of contacting Jesus and
you get
and
it,
then it says, yeah, I'm Jesus. You're like, oh, and you're shit. Like, oh my, holy fuck.
Yeah. I got some other cases here about possessions and using the Ouija board. I don't go into a whole lot of detail because like all of these could be their own cases. And some of them I actually have tucked away, but there's the Valakas case, which is a haunting that led to death in 1991. A teenage girl in Madrid, Spain, named Estefina Gutierrez Lazaro, reportedly became possessed after playing with the Ouija board. She and her friends attempted to contact a spirit when a teacher suddenly interrupted them, breaking the board in the process. The act is believed to have revealed a malevolent force, or released a malevolent force. Shortly after, Estefina began experiencing terrifying hallucinations, seizures, and poltergeist activity in her home. She claimed to see dark figures around her. Her family heard disembodied voices whispering at night. The disturbance grew worse and worse until she mysteriously died in her sleep. Even after her death, her family continued to experience paranormal events, leading to a police investigation that documented the unexplained occurrences in their home. I do actually have a lot of information pulled up on that I was going to either do a Patreon episode or possibly a short one-off episode, but I've got it tucked back in my notes. It's interesting. You can actually get and read the police report talking about all of the poltergeist activity that came from this.
What was I going to say? Isn't like that right there is another interesting. That's why this type of shit is so interesting, because once again, it could come down to demonic possession. It could come down to her psyche believing. Because like I could totally see somebody using it, and let's just say it is the motor function thing, and they
I don't know. It's like a placebo nocebo effect.
Yes, yes, that's great. That's a great way to word it. Like they already have thoughts. They confirm their thoughts. And then they manifest these symptoms because they have convinced themselves of what is happening. It's like going into it thinking, I'm possessed by a demon, and then you get the results that you asked for, essentially. And then you go full swing into it of possession, but it's all in your own fucking mind.
And it almost like, could it, like if you get so in your head and you were thinking about that, you were thinking about being possessed by a demon, you were thinking that this thing from the Ouija board is causing all of these things to happen to you, can you put enough energy into that to essentially like tulpa a poltergeist to affect these things in your physical presence? Because she was not, at some point, she was not the only one being affected by it. her family was hearing things. Her family was seeing things move. So it's almost like it draws energy off of itself after it gets like in your head.
Yeah.
Then it draws energy off.
Well, that and on top of that, by convincing yourself that you are contacting a demon and maybe possessed, maybe it cracks the door wide enough to actually allow it to happen. And then the other question I have, based on what we talked about in the beginning about entities using us as the conduit and the Ouija board as a tool, how do we feel now about the claims? Because it's not this isn't the first. We've seen and heard it countless times. But how do we feel about the mythology around the idea of destroying the Ouija board allows evil to enter a dwelling? Because essentially we talked about how we are actually the conduit. That's just the tool. So how does that transfer take place? How does the entity leave you and manifest itself within the board?
Like, yeah, I feel like
where's that line?
The taboo behind it is that these things come through the board, which I don't like. While some of them say that they do telepathically communicate to the board, to the person, I feel like that's not how it works. Like, it works with, you know, us essentially being the conduit. I don't know that the breaking of the board or the destroying of the board like has anything to do with it. I feel like it was part of the lore that kind of got threaded through, you know,
that makes
like,
sense.
Hey, I'm trying to get rid of the board. I set it on fire and it didn't burn, or I threw it away and it ended up in my garbage again. Like, you hear that shit all the time.
Cause I think
that if anything, the breaking of the board by the teacher maybe just exacerbated like all of the things that she was going through, you know, like once.
And you're right. It could be lore threaded through, because if you think about it, like, people are going to try to explain the anomalies away. And I don't think anybody is going to openly be like, yeah, it was, because it makes so much sense now that I think about it, that you would assume something is coming through the board and making contact. Whereas you're not acknowledging the fact that it's actually using you as the conduit. Therefore, that's where that lore begins to manifest. Is that no, there's evil spirits in the board.
Yep.
So that makes sense. I do like that.
Yep. And if you think about it, like, tons of spirit communication before the board was ever created has happened with the human being the conduit. Like,
yeah.
Like spirit writing. You know, you just hold a pen, you go into a trance, and you contact something from somewhere else, and it will communicate through that pencil. Like, essentially the pencil is the Ouija board. So I don't feel like it matters what tool you're using. It matters that you're the conduit and you have a tool to document what these things want us to know.
Well, and it's also, you know, looking at it like the Ouija board is the tool, like, I guess an easy way to explain that to myself and to some of you out there and to you, Steve, is, what if that's like communication for beginners? Because like we were talking outside earlier about telepathy and stuff like that. Well, not all of us are gauged and or ready for that type of experience. However, this gives like a very beginner friendly conduit.
Yep.
Like, it's very rudimentary, right? It's just literally letters and yes and numbers and yes and no. Like, it doesn't get much easier than that.
Yep. And me and Kyle, we're talking about this outside. We're talking about electronic communication with spirits, which I don't really talk about much here because I'm kind of focusing on the Ouija aspect. But a lot of people that use ghost boxes and like do the Estes method, and they talk about the communication coming in waves. When you're first starting off, you're catching a lot of phrases and sounds that are, for the most part, just radio noise that's coming through. Like, you'll catch a phrase, you'll catch a word. Sometimes it does correlate with like questions being asked to you, but that's like just the top layer. That's like the level one. Level two, as you do it more and more, a lot of people that are the conduit of the Estes method talk about hearing voices underneath the static. And they feel like that is when you're actually getting hands-on communication. You'll hear the radio chatter, but you'll tune yourself out to where you can listen below it. And that's where you start hearing like exact phrases and answers to questions that are being asked that, mind you, like an Estes method, you can't hear the questions being asked. The person is asking the questions and you're just reciting what you're hearing. You have no idea what they're asking. If you watch videos on the Estes method, it's wild. Like the Newkirks did one. They do it every Halloween. You can tune in. Like if you're part of their museum, they did one where they're doing an Estes method and Dana's got her blindfold on. She can't see anything. She's got her headphones on, can't hear anything. And they bring out a Ouija board and they set it on the ground and it's bright pink. Hasbro released it for 1 year. It's like it was marketed toward girls. It came with this carrying case and like this whole thing. And they set it on the ground and they're like, they're asking whatever this entity is through Dana. If you're here with us and you can use this Ouija board, can you tell us what color it is? Mind you, Dana doesn't hear this. And like spot on, she gets the phrase Barbie baby, which you can.
I mean,
that's pretty.
What color do you affiliate with Barbie?
You look at the Ouija board, it's a very Barbie Ouija board.
Right.
It's not a Barbie affiliated, but you would look at that. And I'm like, that shit is so like that implies like an intelligent connection. It's so like bonkers to me. But anyway, got off on a tangent there. To electronic voice phenomenon, which is a whole different thing. Winging it back around to some other possession Ouija board affiliations. In 1974, a woman by the name of Pat Reading was in Birmingham, England. It was allegedly possessed after using a Ouija board. During a session, she made contact with a spirit who called itself Philip, who began to take control over her. Over time, her personality changed drastically. She exhibited violent behavior. She spoke in an unknown language and seemed to have knowledge of things that she could not possibly have known, which if you look into possession cases, that's one of the like telltale signs. These people will have knowledge of languages that are dead, languages they couldn't know, knowledge of the priest's personal life. Like it's kind of a lock in on exorcisms. An Anglican priest was called in to perform an exorcism, which lasted several weeks. Witnesses reported seeing Pat convulse, speak in strange voices, and react violently to religious objects. After a grueling battle, she was finally freed from the possession. The demonic possession of Clara Germana Saleh. One of the oldest recorded cases of Ouija board possession comes from South Africa in 1906. Clara, a schoolgirl, was said to have dabbled in occult practices, which may have included the use of a Ouija board or a similar spirit-invoking ritual. Soon after, she began exhibiting terrifying symptoms of possession. She spoke in multiple languages she had never learned, displayed unnatural strength, and had a strong aversion to religious symbols. Nuns who witnessed her exorcism claimed that she levitated and made inhuman sounds. After a long and difficult battle, two priests were able to drive the entity out of her body. Another one here, I have the Moffat family haunting. In 1987, Tina Resch, a woman involved in the infamous Moffat haunting, claimed that her paranormal experiences began after using a Ouija board. Following the session, strange occurrences began in her home. Objects moved on their own, doors slammed shut without explanation, the furniture shifted in the middle of the night. Some paranormal experts believe that she was the victim of demonic oppression, a stage that can lead to a full-blown possession. Others dismissed the events as a hoax regarding the cause of the disturbance. Regardless, the cause of the disturbance continued for years, leaving those who witnessed it terrified. The last little demonic one here before we get into some crime is the kind of the go-to when you think of Ouija board demons is the demon that goes by the name of Zozo, which is interesting because Pazuzu from The Exorcist kind of has the same go as Zozo,
yeah.
You know, kind of goes hand in hand here. And I'm bringing up him for the sole reason that in next week's episode, a girl contacts an entity that goes by the same name, but it does something very different. So keep that in mind.
Interesting.
The first appearance of Zozo is said to have occurred in 1816. When a young girl in Picardy, France, claimed to have fallen victim to severe demonic possession. This was according to the Infernal Dictionary, the Dictionnaire Infernal, published in 1818 by Jacques Plancy, in which the author shared numerous illustrations of demons and anecdotes regarding their existence. The passage regarding Zozo, following a short passage on Enchanted Castle and Zurig, a mysterious serpent, simply states, I would read that in French, but I don't speak French. It just talks about a demon that possessed this young gal. The girl claimed to be a vessel for a number of demons, including one named Mimi, one named Capulet, and this mysterious entity that goes by the name of Zozo. A lot of that is debated as to how much validity there was to that, but it was 1816. How the fuck are we supposed to know?
Valid point.
So if you kind of get into the lore of Zozo, whenever people are said to have contact him through the board, the planchette is said to perform strange series of figure eights or inverted Zs. Answers become repetitive. The planchette on the Ouija board might also make repetitive movements throughout the alphabet. Z to O, Z to O, Z to O, and back again. If you know anything about Ouija board lore, that's a problem. It said you shouldn't go backwards in the alphabet or in numbers. Why? Because doing so is a method that demons and evil spirits use to open portals into our world and break through to our side. Interesting.
That is an interesting claim. I would like to know more behind that claim.
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, where did we get the information that going backwards? And also, what is that, like, define going backwards for me?
I'm thinking, like, reversed in the alphabet. Instead of going, like, O-Z, it goes Z-O. You know what I mean?
So, like, if something was spelled...
backwards.
Okay. I was going to say, like, what do you mean, like, what if something was, like, I'm 31?
Yeah, that's weird. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, not really.
Because letters of words don't go in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
That would make spelling and reading hard. Yeah. Other signs of Zozo, figure eights and Zs on the board. The planchette rapidly spells out Z-O-Z-O, Z-A-Z-A, or M-A-M-A.
Now, how do they link that to that one?
I guess that just spells who mama. Yeah, they think they're talking to their mama, but it's really Zozo. He goes, surprise, bitch, it's me. in 2012, this is just a little bit of lore. So this is a very, like, outside of that one thing from 1816, not a lot of, like, nothing else happened up until, like, the mid-2000s. So in 2012, a user at ghostspace.com shared a story of a confrontation with a suspicious Ouija board spirit. Her friend had been asking the board questions about her recently deceased father, which it answered correctly. Then it did the same with the user's deceased mother. Eventually, the alleged spirit switched again. They asked who it was this time. The pointer went O-Z, 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 and then wrote, "We call him Oz. We ask him to blow out a candle to prove himself. Before we completed the sentence, the candle was blown out. The strange spirit also knew the exact time when asked. However, it would later reveal a haunting truth to the two. It had been the same spirit the whole time, posing as her friend's father and her friend's dead mother, answering questions correctly by reading their minds."
That's fucked up.
Yeah. Let me see here. A tale at Your Ghost Stories, published in 2012, shares yet another haunting experience. The poster named April had read stories about Zozo herself, but didn't believe them at the time. She recently moved in with her sister, and to celebrate, they had a few friends over and decided to have some fun with the Ouija board. Bad idea.
Yeah.
Because here comes the demons. Here comes the friggin' demons. Headed right through the board, because that's how it works. They place their hands on the planchette, and April asks, is there anyone there? The board replied, yes. When they ask it to reveal its name, the planchette glided over the Z, then the O, then the Z, then the O, then the Z, then the O. They asked the spirit what it wanted, and it says, go to the original post to find out what happens next. So, I don't know. Is this even working? They ask what he wanted, and the board spelled out the word death. I don't feel like that's very nice.
No, that's a pretty... mean gesture. Unless they're asking or it's saying that it wants to die. Then.
Yeah, there is in 2009, this is when kind of the phenomenon really took off online. Because March 24th, a man named Darren Evans from Oklahoma shared his own story online. He'd long been fascinated with the occult, particularly Ouija boards, and had experienced many strange phenomena. He was also shocked, he said, by how many times the word Zozo showed up, even in many different states and many different Ouija boards. Inspired, others came forward with their stories, also claiming to contact the same demon. So there's our little Ouija board demon named Zozo, which I wanted to bring up just because he shows up. Keep in mind, that was 2009. That was the first online kind of come to Zozo meeting there we got. Because in next week's episode, Zozo shows up a little bit earlier, and it ain't what we think it is. So from there, I'm going to move on to a few cases that are kind of true crimey, where Ouija boards are kind of linked in to a set of crimes. Listverse had a whole set of these where people were committing crimes saying that the Ouija board had told them to, all kinds of good, crazy stuff. First and foremost, the most popular one is the Lizzie Borden murders. I'm sure any true crimers out there know exactly what this is. Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 30 whacks when she saw what she had done, gave her father 31 or 41, however many. The whole nursery rhyme. You can actually find and read the post-murder results of a Ouija board session in the prosecutor's notes from Lizzie Borden's trial. According to the spirits, so they actually went to a Ouija board and asked.
That's weird.
If Lizzie was guilty. Like, it's in the trial notes. That's crazy.
Did they do it during the trial?
I don't know if it was there in front of everybody, but it made the notes.
That's fucking nuts that they would even admit that in the court.
Like, that just goes to show you, like, how differently we view the Ouija board now than how they viewed it then.
Yeah, it's definitely bizarre.
That's wild, right? So according to the spirits, Lizzie was guilty. She'd worn trousers during the killing, which she then buried in the yard. Lizzie's cousin, John Morse, assisted her with the cover-up, as did her sister Emma and her personal physician. The Ouija board also indicated that Lizzie would never be found guilty. Her motive? Money. She overheard talk of an investment that she had hoped to inherit being put in her stepmother's name. Apparently, the jury didn't agree with the board. Lizzie was acquitted of the murders, and no one even bothered to dig up the yard to try to find the bloodstained trousers that the Ouija board said was buried.
Of course.
They just said, nah, nah. Another case I found here is from November 8th, 1933. A woman by the name of Dorothea Irene Turley was using a Ouija board with her 15-year-old daughter, Maddie Turley, in their home in Prescott, Arizona. Dorothy was using the planchette, which spelled out a message instructing her daughter, Maddie, to kill her father. Damn. Thereby freeing Dorothea to marry a young cowboy. She also told her daughter...
All for that cowboy love.
Yeah, she also told her daughter that the board could not be denied. So obedient to her mother and the board, Maddie walked up behind her 48-year-old father and shot him twice in the back while he was doing chores on the farm. He died in the hospital a few weeks later. Both Maddie and Dorothea were arrested. The whole story quickly came out. Maddie admitted her guilt and was sentenced to a reform school until she was 18. Dorothea was convicted of assault with intent to commit murder and was given a sentence of 10 to 25 years. However, the conviction was overturned by the Arizona Supreme Court in 1936, resulting in her release from prison. You'll notice a lot of these cases are more so people manipulating the use of the board as opposed to actually being told by the board. So again, just reiterating that humans are the worst monsters.
I agree with that.
The next one here, we have February 10th, 1993. 35-year-old Stephen Young, an insurance broker, entered the home of 45-year-old car dealer Harry Fuller in Wadhurst, England. Young was swimming in debt and knew that Fuller kept large quantities of money in his house. Young shot Fuller once in the back and then shot his young wife, Nicola, four times. When Nicola called the police, I was going to omit a piece there, but apparently I can't. Nicola was shot 4 times, once in the face. When Nicola called the police, the operator heard noises, but thought it was a young child playing games, so no help was sent. It turns out the noise the operator heard was Nicola dying, speaking through her severely broken jaw.
Oof.
A short time later, Young was arrested for the crime. He admitted to going to the Fuller house on the day of the murder, but insisted that Harry and Nicola were already dead, prompting him to run away in fear. That story failed to convince the jury, and he was convicted of 2 life sentences. In October 1994, a retrial was ordered. Because, as times have changed, 4 of the jurors turned out to have sought a bit of outside help making their decision.
Oh, shit.
They used an upturned wine glass on a Ouija board in an attempt to contact the victims to ask them if Young actually did it. Apparently, the board confirmed that Young was the murderer. Dude. The next morning, the foursome told the other 8 jurors about the board's message. Although the jurors insisted they didn't take it seriously or let it affect their decision, Young's appeal for a second trial was granted. The retrial was hard for the family and the victims, who were disappointed by the ruling. Luckily for them, Young was again found guilty. But it's crazy to go from Lizzie Borden's, where they actively asked the board for help, to where when the jurors asked the board for help in 94, they're like, this is bonkers.
Yeah, but imagine having that piece of evidence being the nail to your coffin.
Imagine
him telling the truth in that situation.
Just showed up and found that they were dead when I got here.
Which, I mean, let's be real, could actually happen.
It's true.
But the Ouija board goes, nah.
Oh, sorry about you, loser. Yeah. Sorry about you there.
We're on Team Psycho Killer, and we're going to frame you for it.
Oh, speaking of psycho killers.
That would suck so bad.
Over the course of 2 nights in July 1976, career criminal Gary Gilmore shot 2 men to death in Utah. He was soon arrested and became famous when he demanded to be executed for his crimes. Gary's younger brother, Mikhail, later wrote the classic book Shot in the Heart about their childhood. In the book, Mikhail relays a strange story about their mother, Bessie. According to Mikhail, Bessie was convinced that she had contacted a demonic spirit through a Ouija board as a child. Furthermore, she believed that the demon had subsequently attached itself to her family. She became even more convinced when one of her sisters was killed and another one was left paralyzed after an accident. As an adult, Bessie married Frank Gilmore, whose mother, Faye, was a medium. One night, Bessie was told that there would be a seance at Faye's home. Remembering her own bad experience with the supernatural, Bessie stayed away, returning to find Faye exhausted and terrified. She managed to get the older woman into bed before heading to sleep herself. A short time later, she was awoken by the feeling that something was touching her face. When she opened her eyes, she saw a terrifying, inhuman creature laying in bed beside her. Screaming, she jumped out of bed, only to see Faye walking into the room, shouting, "It knows who you are," and urging Bessie to get out of the house right away. Panicking, she ran into the bedroom of where her children were sleeping. There she saw the creature looking directly into the eyes of her young son, Gary. When she managed to grab her kids and flee the house, Gary reportedly began to have terrible nightmares afterwards. Bessie would see the entity again, standing in her house just before Gary started getting into trouble. She came to believe that the demon she had summoned as a child through the Ouija board had possessed her son, making him an angry, violent man. In 1977, Gilmore was executed for his crimes via firing squad. He is the subject of Norman Mailer's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Executioner's Song, which was adapted into a TV movie starring Tommy Lee Jones. I think I'll do one more here. I got a couple, but we'll just do one more.
That would have sucked to have seen that entity looking at your kid. It would have got a spear.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have Goldberg speared it.
Yep. Just pop up power bomb right there.
Yeah. Yeah. That would suck.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the last one here in a wow. Dyslexia. Let me try this again. In 1983, 25-year-old Anthony Hall and his 16-year-old girlfriend, Bunny Dixon.
It's a good name.
Good name. Were fascinated with Satanism and the occult.
Oh, wow.
That summer, Dixon told Hall, and their friends, 24-year-old Daniel Bowen and 18-year-old Elizabeth Town, about a plan that he'd been given that had been given to her by the spirit of a 10-year-old boy named David, who communicated with her through a Ouija board. The plan involved leaving their home in Florida and joining a carnival in Virginia. In order to fund the trip, they would have to rob and murder a motorist.
Oh, wow. I love that. All that.
Took a turn there at the end.
That's a part of the five-step plan of freedom.
Yeah, it was real wholesome joining the carnival until you had to murder someone to do it. Yeah. On July 20th, Town and Dixon pretended to hitchhike while the two other men hid. 25-year-old Knock Van Dang picked up the girls. The men jumped out and robbed them of $111 at knife point. They then bound and gagged him, drove a short distance to an isolated area where Hall carved an inverted cross into Dang's chest. The youth then made him hop onto a wooded area where they shot him 11 times in the head and the chest. After the murder, they took off in his car, but the two couples split up in North Carolina. Once they were on their own, Bowen and Town called the police and told them they had witnessed a murder. They also led the police to the crime scene. Hall and Dixon were arrested a short time thereafter. All four were tried for the murder. Hall and Bowen got life sentences, while Dixon was given 50 years and Town got 17. So I have a few other ones here. Like I said, this whole, like, all of the true crimey aspect is on Listverse. They gave a whole section of stuff, and I just picked out a few here. This is just kind of touching on, like, the more negative aspects of the Ouija board, like the demon connotation with it, which I don't know if I buy that shit or not, you know, at this point.
I mean, I think it happens for sure.
I think it catches a lot more flack for that than is warranted.
Yeah, I think it's just people, like I said before, not wanting to take the 50-50 gamble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with it.
And I think, as you'll see next week, you need to tune in next week, because I feel like, again, the board is just a tool where we are the conduit, where if you can contact spirits of your dead loved ones and you can contact demons from hell, you can probably contact other entities with these Ouija boards. And I found some cases where that happened.
Thank God.
So, be sure to tune in next week, where shit's about to get weird.
That's what we love.
That's what we love.
We are here for the weird.
So, thanks for hanging out with us today. Hope everybody has a great work week. And check us out at all our socials. Until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and if you're going to go to the carnival, you don't have to rob and murder someone before you do it. Even if the Ouija board tells you to.